Doula Dispensary, the podcast prescribing a weekly dose of all things doula. The dilemmas discussed are made-up scenarios, and any resemblance to actual persons or events are purely coincidental. Please welcome your hosts, Siobhan and myself, Kiki. Hello, Siobhan.
Hello, Kiki.
I like singing your name.
You do.
I should be in a musical or something.
You go into your radio voice.
I do. Oh, hello, all listeners. We're loving to have you with us today.
Yeah, episode...
Three, I think,
three
this
or
year.
Four.
Yeah. No, we three? Missed out lots yeah. of. I think so.
Okay.
I think we can work it out. But anyway, we're glad to have you here.
Yeah.
What have you been up to then, Siobhan, in the last weeks, months, month? Last month.
In the last month. Lots of work. Lots of swimming.
Okay, yes. You do that cold water swimming, don't you?
Loads of swimming. Been away for a swimming retreat weekend. Oh, can you believe that?
No.
A whole weekend of sea swimming.
And what was the longest distance you swam?
5K.
You are joking.
I did 11 over the weekend, but in one go, 5.
So hang on a minute. 5 kilometres swimming, that's literally... So 1 kilometre is 40 lengths. So 40 times 4 times 5 is 200 lengths in a pool.
Yeah, but there's no wall to kick off every 25 metres. You're in the sea with the waves and the tide. Yeah.
Did you wear a wetsuit?
I did for that one because it was a long one. So yeah. I knew I'd be in the water for a long time. So yes,
How long did it take you?
Just under 2 hours.
Oh my God. Mm. Well, congratulations. Thank I'm impressed.
You.
Absolutely.
What about
brilliant.
You? What have you been up to?
So in the last month, I've been to Bournemouth, had a doula course there.
Love Bournemouth. That's where I was down that way, swimming.
Oh, lucky you.
It's a lovely part of the world, isn't it, Dorset?
It really is. Yeah. I had a really nice week there with some lovely aspiring doulas and walks on the beach. And yeah, it was really, really nice. And just getting ready for another course in London next week.
Yeah, packed course as well.
Yes, sold out. So really, really chuffed with that. And I also think I have been booked for a birth as well.
Oh.
So I don't do that many births now.
When's that?
September.
Okay.
So, yeah, really.
Lovely.
Really getting back into...
Dipping your toe back in.
Well, I think you have to. I think if you're going to be teaching doulas, you have to also...
Know what you're talking about. You need to walk the walk as well as talk the talk. Very yeah, absolutely.
Important. So, well, maybe we should kick off this month's episode.
Yeah, let's do it.
With some stuff, yeah. Ba-da-ba-da-ba.
Now it's time for...
Doula Dilemma.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was so beautiful. Let me read you this week's month's dilemma. A doula has been booked for a birth with a client as her partner is working abroad and might miss the birth. They have been preparing for a physiological birth and made a really strong connection with each other. The partner returns and just in time for the birth, and this is the first time at the birth that the doula meets him. He has a very different view of what should be happening. How does the doula deal with that situation?
Interesting dilemma.
It is indeed. That is tricky.
It is. It is. So, yeah, she's never met him.
No.
That's difficult anyway, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, I've been in this situation, but the good thing that time was that he was just very not very knowledgeable. So that was the issue there, that there was a lot of things that I would have covered in the antenatal sessions that he didn't have a clue about, but he was very happy to go with whatever his wife had decided and what we were doing. So that was fine.
So he was more of a go with the flow type
exactly.
of person, which is easier when you're faced with a situation you don't understand.
Absolutely.
Whereas maybe this one was a little bit more of a control.
Yes.
Like he wanted to keep control or felt that...
Well, I mean, yeah.
If more of a medicalized approach.
Yeah, well, if we think about it, what are most people used to when they think about childbirth?
Well, when they think about a hospital.
Yes.
You think of It's medical, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
You're going in to see the experts and they're going to fix the problem.
Yes, and you should just trust everything Absolutely. That they say. So I guess that's where the challenge here might be.
There could also be some fear yes. around the being out of control mm-hmm. and not understanding.
Yeah, a real worry for his wife and his unborn child, which is, you know, that in combination with that belief that childbirth is really dangerous and that you need to do, you know, have as many interventions as possible.
So this, I mean, this situation is quite, it depends how it would pan out. It could go one of two ways.
Okay, give me one way.
Well, one way, the worst case scenario would be that, you know, you and the client who have spent weeks and weeks mm-hmm. putting together this beautiful birth preference, the client's educated herself on what birth looks like
yeah.
and has decided a physiological approach is the one she wants.
Yeah.
What was I getting at? He could really undermine that.
Yeah.
And be quite sort of disruptive of that process.
So either the doula and the woman basically chuck him out. Or the other one is, you know, I've been in situations where there've been a real conflict between my clients, i.e. between the woman giving birth and her partner or her husband.
Oh, God, I've had this, yeah.
I have to be honest and say, and I think you agree with me, as a doula, I'm going to be more on the birthing person's, the woman's side.
Well, it's the person who's exactly. giving birth, isn't it, that your main focus has to
That's
be
That's it. So
them.
I might, whilst I might empathise with the partner, I'm completely there for her, for that person. So, and that's challenging enough because you are walking a fine line because you don't want your client to feel like you're letting them down or kind of sticking up for the other person that they're in disagreement with. Yeah. Whilst you also don't want to agitate the partner to feel like, because potentially he could just throw you out, couldn't he? You know, potentially.
could have a go.
Yeah, I would just probably snoop off of him with my tail between my legs. So, you know, those situations are hard. And how do you deal with those? Well, you try and listen. You try and understand where everyone's coming from while the strong desire for one thing or the other. Even sometimes taking your client away from the situation, like going to the toilet.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things. And having a conversation with them there, being careful not to, you know, say anything bad about their partner, but just, you know, really finding out what they want to do.
Yeah.
So I guess it would be potentially a similar thing in this situation, couldn't it?
And it also depends on the healthcare providers who are there in the room as well, because if they are of a completely different outlook to your client, they could be egging on the partner as well.
Yes.
Whereas if you get, you know, a midwife who is actually very supportive, which I've had that, where the midwife is also supportive of the woman's choices and she's doing fabulously.
Yeah.
The midwife can actually be a fantastic way of either getting him out of the room or just making him listen because she's in a uniform.
Yes, medically trained.
Medically trained. Mm-hmm. He will listen to her.
Yeah.
So you can kind of maybe bring them a bit more round that way because the professional, I say in
brackets,
you know, is telling them that everything is okay.
Yeah, and also there's, you know, there's always better to be, but when there's more numbers, more people thinking one way. And there is actually overall a lot of calming down that needs to be done often with the partners because obviously it's a frightening situation often for them and not understanding even more so if you haven't had a chance to prepare them antenatally.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's so important that we get the chance to do that.
I just think it's always a bit of a red flag that anyone that's actually going to be at that birth, if they're not at the antenatals,
yeah,
it is potentially there is going to be
yeah,
a bit of unrest or a bit of disruption, because yeah, not everybody's singing from the same hymn sheet.
No, exactly, because you haven't, you the birth team is the important thing, yeah, isn't it? And when you don't, when you have created a small birth team, i.e. you and you, the woman or the client that's given birth, and then you have any additional, yeah, people joining that afterwards,
yeah,
it's hard. It, like, is, for example, the mum turns up.
Yeah.
That's happened as well.
So, you know, I've had that where I've said, well, if your mother is coming, mm-hmm, she needs to come to the second antenatal, yeah, where we discuss your birth preferences, yeah, so she understands,
yeah,
what you're looking to achieve.
Yeah.
And the three times I've had that,
yeah,
twice the mothers have said, actually, I don't think I'm going to come.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because they don't.
Because they're like, actually, they're, do you know what? Think, I, yeah, won't be any help.
No. Because it is one thing being emotionally involved, which the partner is. Yeah. Like, this is a different level of emotional attachment, mm, or involvement with their wives or their daughter. So being a doula, you can kind of step back, can't you, from that a little bit. While we still care about our clients, mm,
You're not emotionally, you're not thinking with your heart, you're thinking with your head as a, yes, doula, aren't you?
Yeah. Or,
but with the partners, especially obviously if it's a male partner, often that fear, because it's what it is, it's,
yeah,
fear,
yeah,
it can present, maybe aggression's not the right word, no, but it can come across quite abruptly.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Which again makes everything very spiky.
Yeah.
So it's just remembering that actually, even though they're coming across quite,
yes,
defensive, yeah, and argumentative,
yeah,
it is actually coming from a place of fear.
Yeah. And as always, it's, if you can, in that situation, ask questions. Like, yeah, from them, what is it that you need?
What do you need, yeah, to make you feel more comfortable?
Yeah. Or what information?
What information, yeah,
yeah, will make you feel like you can, you need to kind of, yeah, work through this process.
What do you need to know to, mm-hmm, help you understand what's happening here?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I mean, it's probably, those situations happen, you know, when someone hires someone just in case their partner can't be there. Mm. For example, also if they don't have anyone to look after another child.
Yeah.
But you'd like to think they're still involved in the preparation.
Yeah, yeah.
But it all depends on the partner, doesn't it? You know, if they can.
Yeah.
Or if they want to. And also sometimes previous trauma, like a previous birth trauma, can also prevent partners from wanting to come along.
Because, or it may also be something from their childhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they, you know, maybe their mother was in hospital when they were a child, mm-hmm, and they just associate that with
a bad
place. Yeah. So, yeah, there could be a lot going on, couldn't, yeah, there?
Absolutely.
But as doulas, we just got to try and, it's quite hard to manage everything in that situation.
Yes.
Because you're trying to reassure the partner,
yeah,
to bring more harmony to the room.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you still need to keep supporting your clients. So it can be quite difficult. That's why I think, you know, trying to get the midwife on board to help, yes, is, you know, is important as,
and,
well.
And if you don't have that, it makes it even more, God, challenging.
Yeah. Make sure you've got a flask of brandy with you or something. I don't know. Yeah. Well, no, worst case scenario, send him off to move the car.
Yes, that's a good one.
And hopefully he's gone for a long time.
Yeah. Or and take her and have a conversation. How are we gonna, you know, what, mm, do you need me to do?
Yeah.
How do we deal with this situation?
Take her into the bathroom. Yeah. Position yourself against the door.
Yeah.
So that you can't actually physically move because you're supporting her.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a difficult one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't come up too often.
No. But hopefully that's,
yeah, giving you some
food for thought. Ba-da-ba-da-ba.
Now it's time for
question time.
Okay, and this week's question has been emailed in and it's a postnatal one. So, what do you do when a client wants to book you for postnatal work before the baby is born? How do you secure dates when you don't know when the baby is going to be born?
That is...
That's a good one.
Yes.
What would you do, Kiki?
Oh, thanks. I knew you'd say that.
Mm.
How do you feel about that, Kiki?
What would you do?
Yes. The issue, I guess, is because we don't know when the baby's going to be born.
Yeah.
And babies can come 2 weeks after the due date or more sometimes, rarely, but it happens. So you obviously need to have an income and make money. So are you going to sit and wait for 2 weeks and do nothing? And then that might also then run into your client coming afterwards. You know, so, you know, yeah. Say you've agreed to do 4 weeks work.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden you're starting 2 weeks late, so to yeah. speak. So I think what you do is you have to be flexible. You have to have flexibility, but also think about when you check your diary that you don't have any, you know, holidays booked or specific things you can't get out of, because I think you need to actually tell that client straight away if you know, there's some days that you definitely can't do. So I guess an easy way to do is, I mean, postnatal doulas work very differently. You know, some might sell a number of hours spread over a certain amount of time. Others might do specific days. So I think, I mean, you can't really start before the baby's there. Unless you say, I'll start on this date and then help you cook some meals for your freezer or get your nursery up and running or yeah. come shopping with you. I mean, you could do things antenatally, i.e. before the baby's yeah. born. But I do think you have to kind of assume that most babies are born in week 41.
Yeah.
So actually, also, you need to add to that. What if they want to have some time with their partners or husbands, like as a family unit? So if the baby is born 2 weeks after the due date and then they want to have 2 weeks on their own before you actually start.
Well, that's where you need to clarify. So who is it that's looking for the confirmed date? Is it the client who is adamant they want you there from the minute the baby's born? Or is it you looking to block your diary out? Who is it?
So who is more important, do you think?
No, who is it that wants the, like, the definite doula answer?
Well, both.
They both do.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but so if it's the client, the client's going to say to you, I don't need you to start straight away. I'd want you to start a few weeks later.
Yeah.
Yeah? Because if they want you to start straight away,
yeah,
you need to get that in writing so they don't then turn around and say, oh, the baby's here, but actually now I don't need you for the first 2 weeks. So you want to make that very clear.
Yes.
Do you want me from the minute the baby's born?
Yeah.
Or do you want a week's grace or 2 weeks grace yeah. before I start?
Mm-hmm.
That, I think you need to 100% have clarity on that.
Well, yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So if they want you from when the baby's born,
yeah,
you know you're definitely going to be starting work from week 42, aren't you,
really? Yeah, latest.
Yeah, it's unlikely it's going to go beyond that.
Yeah.
So 2 weeks beyond the due date, you know you're definitely working.
Yeah.
So then you've just got that period of time before where the baby may come early.
Yeah.
So you could, if it's the client that's very much like, no, I want you.
Yeah.
They could basically have you sort of sitting in limbo and paying you 50% of your rate.
Yeah.
To secure you.
Yeah.
So you're potentially not working.
No.
But you are being paid 50% of your fee.
Yeah, like some nannies do, their maternity yeah. nannies.
So to hold it, they yeah. will take a 50%.
But so how would that work? So say if I'm going to be doing... So basically you do that based on the hours. So if they say, I want you to start the day I come home from hospital with a baby,
yeah.
say. And then I want you to do 3 days, 3 hours every week.
Mm.
So would you then charge 50% of 3 hours every week up until the baby's born?
3 hours, yeah. So whatever your fee is for that week, yeah. three sessions yeah. or whatever, yeah. 9 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would take 50%.
Yeah.
Which guarantees that you're available.
Yeah.
On those days only.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if the baby hasn't come, they've still paid you 50%.
Yeah.
But then you have to decide, is that worth
your while?
Yeah. Is it worth you only getting 50%? Could you get 100% somewhere else?
Yeah, exactly.
But you could potentially do that and take on another client, but say to that other client, I'm actually on call to start, so I may have to change your hours.
Yeah. So it's all about communication with everyone from the beginning. So an easy or maybe more flexible way to be in a postnatal doula and having start days is then to say, look, I'm going to probably be starting somewhere around this date.
I think you need to just, first of all, clarify, do they want a period of time where they're just...
The family.
Just the family. Yeah. That you need clarity on. So, yes, oh, yes, we do want a bit of time.
Yeah.
Okay, how much time? A week, two weeks, 3 weeks? Yeah. You need to clarify that. Then you can definitely book in time.
Yeah.
2 weeks past the due date.
Yes.
2 weeks past... the family time.
Yeah.
You can definitely book in time from there. So you could guarantee them those dates beyond that.
Yeah.
But anything before that,
yeah,
if you're not going to take a 50% holding fee,
you
can say, look, if the baby comes or you need me earlier, if I'm available, I will come.
Yeah.
But between now and then, I will be taking on other work.
Yes.
So then it's up to the client.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Because you can't book, it's not like you're booking appointments, is it, with postnatal work? As in like...
No, if the baby hasn't come, then you have got a period of time where, there has to be flexibility on both sides.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's a really good answer, I think. Hopefully that will be helpful to the person that sent in the message asking us.
Let us know. And if anyone else has got any other suggestions of what they do, to hold dates or not hold dates, then please do let us know on our Facebook page, or you can email us at
thedoulardispensary@gmail.com.
Sorry, I went in too early.
That's all right. All right, well, that's great. I think we'll just leave that one there then. Ba-da-ba-da-bow.
The Doula Dose, your weekly dose of doula.
Thank you, Annabelle, for that lovely introduction. So, yes, it's time for...
The doula dosi dosi doula.
Dosi do a doula.
Dosi do do doula.
What is this month's dose?
Why don't we have a little discussion about social media?
Okay. And in what?
Well, in respect? In the respect of how it's... I mean, social media... It's a crazy world anyway, it's so fast paced and lots of posts and information, and like you get bombarded with stuff, don't you?
Yeah.
And I just feel lately that it feels in a way that there's like a competition amongst birth workers to see who can like come up with the best posts. But what I mean is I don't sound like I'm criticizing now, but it feels like, are we as birth workers, doulas, posting stuff to encourage, help and support our clients, or are we creating stuff to get further reach?
You mean like shock value?
Yeah, like building followers and I don't know. That's my discussion. Like, are we actually helping pregnant women and people? Are we helping
or hindering?
Yeah, are we making it worse for them? Because I'm not, obviously, I have been a birth worker for over 20 years. So I think my view on things are a bit skewed. So I might be completely wrong. And I'm happy to put my hand up and say I'm wrong. But what information do actually pregnant women and pregnant people want? Like, and I guess that's going to be as different from person to person. But overall, like you're down the middle kind of person out there who's pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
What's their mindset and what are they looking for on social media? And what would be helpful and what would scare them? And how do we encourage a positive kind of view on childbirth and parenting, I guess, and breastfeeding, without making it sound like it's a trial they have to pass, or
they're going to war.
Exactly, they're going to war, or if they don't have, you know, I don't know. I guess
you know, a degree of education around maybe some of the hurdles they may come up against with their antenatal appointments.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, that information is needed.
Yes.
I think they do. There does need to be a level of understanding that you really do need to question everything. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't just walk in and hand your body over.
No.
Which I think, as a society, we think we should do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was told I had to have X, Y, Z. Yeah. I was told this is what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We do need to educate people that actually know that it's your body. You have autonomy over your body.
Yes.
Only you get to decide what happens. But I guess I understand what you're saying. It's the way that that's delivered.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe some of it is a bit shock factor and does make it, yeah, I guess, some of the social media that you do see, it does make it look like you're going into battle, which would be really scary, especially for somebody who's not of that demeanour, who doesn't like confrontation, doesn't think, I don't want to go to my antenatal appointments and have confrontation.
Yeah.
So I guess we need to deliver the information in a softer way, maybe. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure, because I'm sure the way it's being put across, probably for some people, that's exactly how they need to hear it.
Mm.
Because that's how they... And you're right, we need to be telling, like, an honesty around what actually happens when you are pregnant and you go to see, you know, your care provider or whatever. But at the same time, yeah, how do we... I don't actually know the answer.
Mm.
But it just feels like quite brutal, some of the information out there sometimes about how, you know, I don't want anyone to think they can't trust people. But at the same time, can you trust your care providers? Like, where are they coming from? And with the NHS in the UK at the moment being so understaffed and on a crisis point, it's just, you know... I just worry, I guess, for people going into this system feeling like they don't, what they believe, and I know this is to be true, is like lots of pregnant women and couples go into the hospital believing that the people that are meeting there are going to do what's best for them.
Mm.
Like they're going to be doing what's best for them. And that includes, I will listen to what they think I should be doing because...
It's my best interest.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When actually, yes, it's not that they don't want, you know, their best interest is the baby and the mother alive.
Yeah.
You know, that's like a taken for granted thing, isn't it, really? That's your minimum.
Well, that's the minimum standard you should expect.
Yeah.
You're going to come out of that alive holding a baby.
Exactly.
That shouldn't be the, you know, the pinnacle, the top. You know,
but that,
well, at least you're alive and your baby as well.
Yeah.
That should not be the goal, should it? Like, actually.
But that is the priority. That's like, that is why, yes, that's why they will look after you, because that is important. But then everything else that comes, it's like they're not going to do, because they don't know what's right for you, because they haven't met you before.
Mm. But there, yeah, I mean, we know there's defensive practice.
Yes.
And we know that a lot of what is suggested is to, you know, cover the hospital, cover their own backs.
Yes.
And that we, you know, people do need educating around that.
Yes.
To be able to ask the right questions, to get the information they need.
Yeah.
To make informed decisions.
Yeah.
And to know that they can do that. They can challenge, they can question.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know what you mean. It's how we deliver that.
Yeah, because I'm sure there's some pregnant women out there and pregnant people out there that are literally unfollowing accounts. It wouldn't surprise me.
Oh, yeah, I've had clients telling me that they've had to unfollow lots of accounts because it's just too triggering for them. You know, especially if they've had a previous not great experience and now they want to educate themselves more around their birth experience and they start following lots of accounts to educate themselves, but they actually find it more triggering than... educating. So they've had to unfollow. I completely understand where you're coming from.
Which I guess what I'm like, having had this discussion and had this dose sink in, is that there's going to be different ways, the need to communicate in different ways to reach all the people. And I guess there's always going to be some people offended by some of the stuff or unfollowing accounts while others will like it. But
there's also, you know, I mean, yeah, I'm thinking of one particular account, which is, it's always about the shock factor.
Yeah.
You know, it's a healthcare professional.
Yeah.
And it's always about the shock factor.
Yeah, to get
the reach, to get the engagement, in
the emotional kind of arguments, like, or the, like they post things because they want people to.
Well, they're just worried about their reach,
yeah,
and their engagement. Yeah. They're not actually thinking about the emotions behind the people reading what you're writing.
No,
which to me is just so wrong.
Yeah,
if that's what you're doing on your social media,
yeah,
then. You really shouldn't be on there.
No, but it's interesting, isn't it? Because people are more likely to put a negative comment on things. So if you get annoyed with something you read, you're more likely to take action.
Yeah.
Than if you like really like something, you're less likely to actually
engage with it.
Yeah. So this is the thing. I guess that's how social media works, that if you can be...
controversial.
You know, yeah, and bringing up a lot of emotions so people start...
That's playing with people's emotions and pregnant people.
Yeah.
And which then, it's not right.
No, but I'm also sure there's a lot of fake accounts out there that also kind of winds it all up. You know, their comments.
Oh, yeah, the comments. You can always see the fake Karen comments, can't you? Yeah. You know, just to get a reaction. The keyboard warriors that love to stir the pot.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there is an answer to it. I mean, it's different strokes for different folks, isn't it? Some people will love those accounts that are all kind of like militant and let's go to war. And then others, you know, they won't like that approach and they'll go for something that's a little bit more...
Softer approach.
Softer, but still educational.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess it's just finding what works... what works for you.
Yeah.
But definitely if it doesn't feel right, I would always say to a client, just unfollow.
Yeah.
Don't have it coming up in your feed.
Yeah.
Don't let it trigger you.
Yeah. And as doulas with social media accounts, it can feel like relentless to, you know, when you're a self-employed doula.
Oh, God, you know, social media is...
Yeah.
I mean, it's a full-time job on its own, isn't it? The amount of time you're meant to... constantly do, and it's always changing. Just when you get the hang of doing something, suddenly Instagram says, no, we're not going to do that anymore. Yeah. We don't favor that anymore. We're now doing this.
Yeah.
And then you've got to go away and learn a whole new thing to do.
It is a lot. I mean, it used to be, you know, a place to post pictures and behind the scenes. And
all it was about a visual.
Exactly.
It was a visual board. Yeah. That's all it was.
And now it's
And that's grown into the monster it is.
It's just all about reels and videos and all that kind of content stuff, which is, you know, it's so graphical, you know, especially when you're pregnant, to see some of the films. You know, it's like a memory, isn't it? Like, it's like watching something that goes straight in to your head. So I think you have to
The thing is yourself. As well, the demographic that we work with, the age range of women and birthing people that we work with, this is what they this is how they communicate. This is, I mean, I looked on my Google Analytics the other day and Instagram was my second biggest
referral
to my website.
Yeah, so but it is hard, it's tricky, but I think you just have to, be you, be authentic, and yes, there are, that may be
the I think the key things that I've always heard from the experts of Instagram is to just showcase who you are. It's the person behind the brand.
Yeah.
That's what Instagram's meant to be.
Yeah.
It's not meant to be about the brand.
No.
It's meant to be about the person behind the business.
Yeah.
Just be authentic and be yourself. And if that is militant and so be it, because then you will attract like-minded people. And that's fine. But if you're more of the kind of, you know, the gentler, softer approach, that's also fine.
Yeah, it just seems to be so fast-paced. It's like really content fast-paced. Is just flying at you.
That's why you should just unfollow everything.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea. I mean, personally, I don't really have time to watch much on there. which is nice because it takes up too much time to actually post things on there.
Yeah, exactly. You spend all your time putting together a post.
Yeah.
Then you haven't got time to actually read anything else.
But also tell your clients to unfollow accounts. Then. Yeah. And when you're suggesting accounts for clients to follow, also, you know, give a bit of a warning. Like, this is your more militant groups and this is your more, you know...
Gentle approach. Yeah.
Well, I think that was the end of that dose. Ba-da-ba-da-bow.
So we've come to the end of the show.
We have.
What are you up to next month or this month?
Well,
before we record again.
Yes. So I'm. Well, I don't know when we will be recording again.
It's the summer.
Yeah. So I am.
You're off to Sweden.
That's it. I'm doing the course next week. Then I'm off to Sweden for a little bit over the summer. So I'm not sure if we'll get together until maybe. I don't know. When are you free?
Yeah,
September.
Well, I mean, I've got one going off to university, so.
Oh, wow.
That will be in September. So I'll have to be packing her up and shipping her off. So I've got one going to university and one finishing.
How exciting. But what else have you got in the next? Just have you got births?
Yes, I got a couple of births left to do before the end of June.
Okay.
And then I'm off July and August.
Oh.
Yay!
You need to have a holiday.
Yes, Siobhan. No,
you need to take a break.
I thought, no, that's it. I'm taking it off. Yeah. I'm going to do lots of little holidays, not a big one. I'm doing lots of little ones.
Lovely.
And then, yeah, getting her ready for going off to uni.
Yeah, your last one, yeah?
My last one, my baby.
Fly in the nest.
Oh,
gosh, that's something else, isn't it?
Yep, cutting the umbilical cord.
Yes. I know.
So you're off to Sweden.
Yes. So I'm going to be facilitating a course online from Sweden, actually, in July, beginning of July. I have lots of stuff to do on my website because I want to launch my new website.
That'll be more exciting. And then there's another course in September.
There is where is that course in September? It's in Liverpool.
In Liverpool.
Yeah. And then and then October we're coming to Ireland. Cork. To Cork.
County Cork.
So. Isn't that what they say after every sentence? So.
So.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So. Lots of stuff coming up. I also want to do some more online courses. So I have plenty of work cut out for myself while I'm in Sweden. But
brilliant.
Looking forward to that. So.
Well, so that just leaves us to say have a lovely summer, everybody, for anyone that's listening to us month by month.
Yeah.
Enjoy your summer. Hopefully you have a nice rest with your families and your friends.
Absolutely.
And we will see you again in the autumn.
Yes.
No, so, autumn? Yeah, well, autumn.
I guess it will be, unless we get one in before then, but I doubt it very much.
We will try.
Yeah. So... I guess we're just going to say then, see you
next autumn.
Listeners should always do their own due diligence on any information received from these discussions to form their own opinions and best judgments. In preparing this podcast, we have endeavoured to offer current, correct and clearly expressed information aimed at our audience. However, we make no claims that the information will be accurate, complete or current at all times, and we accept no liability for any reliance placed by any person on this information. We make no representations or warranties of any kind about the suitability, reliability, timeliness and accuracy of the information contained herein.